Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I am Eric Olson. It's time once again for America's Most Haunted. We have an extra special, super duper Amazemo show tonight because it's broadcaster to broadcaster. In this corner, us. In the other corner, Jim Harold. I will turn it off. I will turn it over to the world famous haunted housewife, Teresa Argy, who will run the show this evening because you know why? Because she deserves it.
Well, hello, everyone. Hey, Eric. Tonight we have very special guests. We have Jim Harold, the original paranormal podcaster. I've looked up to Jim for years. Jim was in it. I like to say Jim was in it before the paranormal was cool. Jim Harold is America's most popular podcaster. We're a close second. A true pioneer who's been at it since before the paranormal was cool. Jim has got a load of credits. I can't even get into all the credits he has, but master's degree in applied communications theory and methodology, certified digital media consultant, and he's taught at the university level. But in 2005, Jim created the Paranormal Podcast, and at the time it was one of only a handful of programs covering the field. His background in media and training in broadcasting combined with a lifelong love of the paranormal created the start of what I like to call the Jim Harold Podcasting Empire, which now includes the Paranormal Podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire, and the Paranormal Plus Cub. With his easygoing conversational style and soothing voice, Jim's shows are a must-do for anyone in the paranormal. He's interviewed just about anybody you can think of, but what we're really excited about is his books. And his latest book, Jim Harold's, well, the first book was Jim Harold's Campfire, True Ghost Stories. It came out in 2011. And the latest one, True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2, which was released in September, is currently the number one supernatural bestseller on Kindle, and these are stories that Jim got from his millions of listeners. So we're very excited. Congratulations on the book, and welcome to America's Most Haunted, fellow Ohioan, Jim Harold.
Hey, Teresa and Eric, great to be here. Just two quick things. I don't think I'm America's most popular podcaster, but maybe some would say most popular paranormal podcaster, and the book's not quite at number one now. It slid a couple slots, but it's still doing well, and we're so excited. I'm so excited to be with you guys tonight to talk about spooky stories.
Are there any other kind of podcasts besides paranormal ones? I wouldn't know. I don't listen to the paranormal ones.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I started back in 2005, I saw there were there was a site, I don't even know if it's around, called Podcast Alley. And I looked and I saw 19 other podcasts about the paranormal. And I thought, oh, my gosh, how am I going to compete against 19 other podcasts in the paranormal? Now, I think all those guys are gone now. I think I'm still here. And, you know, it's been fun. It's fantastic, as you know, just the technology to do this. And it's just a great deal of fun.
Well, I always said that when we first got in it, when Eric brought the idea to starting a show, and I know there's a bazillion podcasts out there, there's a bazillion paranormal ones, and just like there's a bazillion paranormal groups. And when I got into actual investigating, there weren't that many, at least in this area, and it's just grown exponentially year by year. But I always remembered, yours I've been following since I had a computer, since forever. And I always thought that there was, you know, there's Coast to Coast, of course.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then I actually discovered you long before Darkness. But then there's you're the Paranormal Podcast. Then there's Darkness Radio.
Yep.
And then came us. And I'd like to think that we are up there ourselves.
You guys absolutely are. You should be very proud. You've got quite a following that you've built very rapidly, much more rapidly than I built mine. So I really hats off to you, and congratulations on the success of the show.
Oh, it's a lot of it is our timing. Even though we've got there's a lot out there, it's also a lot more accessible and easy to do. And plus, Eric has got this huge background in this, so that helped. He's all about the marketing and the media side of this, so that helped for sure. But how have things changed since you first started in 2005 until now? I mean, it's growing and growing, and that's obviously, and just going through your book, seeing the stories that you've collected from all over the world, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's really changed is the dialogue in the community, because, you know, in 2005, no Facebook, no Twitter. you know, so the comments and so forth I would get, occasionally people would leave a comment on the site and emails, but there was no social networking. I know you guys have a big Twitter following, for example. So, I mean, to me, that's the biggest change. Plus, the other big change was, you know, back in 2005, 2006, podcasting was a hot thing. Everybody wanted to get a podcast. And then there were the few years there people said, oh, podcasting's dead. But now podcasting is again on everybody's lips because of smartphones. And they're so much easier to consume and download. And I think that's really, you know, it's really exciting. And I think, hey, as many people that want to broadcast on this subject, the more the merrier. I'm all for it. I think it's great.
I think that having access to these shows is great. It's really opened up a whole new world. And I was teasing about it. I don't know any other podcast. My daughter, who's not into paranormal stuff but is into science and astronomy, she found the astronomy podcast, which is...
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Stuff like that she loves. So it's like anything you can think of, anything that you like, you can find it out there. And it's great because this stuff is free. I remember, and I don't know if this is true or not, but to get... Coast to Coast on the computer to have it streaming cost used to cost money. I don't know if it still does or not, but it was like, you know, if you can't stay up at 4 in the morning to listen to that show, you'd have to pay for it on the computer. And most of these podcasts are free or, you know, relatively inexpensive if they're not free.
Right.
So it's really, I think, opened up the accessibility to a whole new audience, which is great, but then you got to sort through the good ones or the bad ones. And
yep.
Yours was always on top, but it stayed up there, and it's risen to the top. And your reputation is just, it's untouchable. I mean, you've got this great reputation. I was thrilled to find out, you know, how actually close that you are from Ohio, because as you wrote in my book, all the best paranormal people are from Ohio.
That's exactly right. No, that was great to find out that we live in relatively the same area. And there are a lot of people in northeast Ohio, our area, Michelle Belanger, you know, John Kachuba is down south a little bit, but there are a lot of people in your Haunted Housewives, and there are a lot of people in northern Ohio. I guess it's just kind of a spooky area.
It is, and I love our area. I love growing up in this area, but what you do, and again, for years, I didn't know you were from Ohio. I figured you were from L.A. or something like that because of the success of the show and how great you did, but I always thought, and this was a big thing, and when I first got into the... maybe the, I don't want to say the television side, but maybe the media side of the paranormal was, you know, you've made it when you've been on Jim Harold's show.
That's so nice. Hey, that's what people are saying about you guys now. I really appreciate that. And it's great. And I've loved, that's one of the best things about my job is that because I do have the free shows, and I do have a plus club, you know, people are really into my shows and they want to get more and they want to get courses like the one you taught for me, and I really appreciate that. It's a great course, by the way. You know, they can get into that, but the people I get to talk to, having to been able to interview people like Brad Steiger or, you know, Nick Redfern or, you know, and again, I think, you know, I don't only focus on ghosts. I also do UFOs and a lot of other things, but I've also been able to, you know, talk to people who unfortunately are no longer with us, and really was very privileged to talk to people like Philip Coppens, who did a lot of work on the ancient aliens work, and Jesse Marcel Jr., who recently passed. So I'm very appreciative of that, but I'm more the subject of our show tonight. One of my most favorite things to do, and one of the best things to talk about when being on America's Most Haunted, is talking to just normal folks all across the world and getting all of their spooky stories. It is so cool.
And so tell us about your book. Tell us a little bit about how your first book came about and now this second book, and what's the difference between the two. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about stories, and I'm actually going to let Eric talk because this is all me tonight, and I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to talk too. But tell us about your books. Tell us about Campfire.
Well, I'll explain the origins of the show because this is based on my show, Jim Harold's Campfire, and you can find that on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. You know, the last 90 days are absolutely free, and actually we were just featured by iTunes on the front page, podcasting page over the last week or so with coming in with Halloween, so very appreciative of that. So if people like ghost stories, check that out. It's also jimherold.com, of course. But I had started the Paranormal Podcast in 2005, And just on a lark in 2009, I said, well, I'll do a special where I have people call in with their spooky stories. And everybody seemed to love it. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's something here. And I thought, let's see, what can I name this? You know, it's kind of like people telling campfire stories. What should I call it? What should I call it? And I'm like, well, I'm not exactly the brightest bulb in the bunch, but it's an electronic campfire, so why don't I just call it Jim Harold's Campfire? So we started the show in 2009, and I was talking to a good friend of mine who I've met through my paranormal pursuits. First of all, as a guest on my show, and we've become very friendly, and she's a great writer in her own right and does a lot of great stuff, Annie Wilder, and she said, you ought to put together these stories in the book. And I'm like, you know what, that's a good idea. So back in 2011, we put together a book of about 70 stories, various stories that I had selected from the book, and then that did fairly well, and I decided I wanted to do it again. This time I took a little bit different route in that I prefer the second book over the first. They're standalone. You can read them in any order. It doesn't really matter because there's basically 70 separate little vignettes and little stories from the show. And this one, maybe I edited a little with a little heavier hand. I think the pacing on this one's better. I think I selected for more shows on this one. So my favorite is the second one, and it's really done super well, and we're so excited about it, and people seem to love it. That's mainly ghost stories, but there is a little bit of UFO in there and some stuff that's just not easily classifiable. And the thing I love about it, these are just, as I said before, I have all the respect in the world, Teresa, for example, for what you do, being a ghost hunter. But I do like the fact that the majority of these stories are from people who are not necessarily seeking the paranormal. The paranormal sought them while they were doing whatever it is they do, just their normal life, and something came up that was like, wow. So I picked the best of the best stories out of about 50 episodes, and we're up to about 160-some episodes now. So there's plenty of material for more books. But I picked the best of the best. I'm very proud of this book, and it's been, I think we have 99 reviews on Amazon when I checked today, and 89 of them are 5 stars. So we're feeling really good about it.
And the book is great because, like Jim said, it's from listeners, and these are everyday people. A casting agent once told me, there's nothing that interesting about a ghost hunter finding a ghost. You're expected to find a ghost. It's more compelling when an everyday person encounters something in the supernatural and the paranormal. That is more frightening. What you do, not that there's, he wasn't trying to make light of what we do,
right,
but you seek it out. That's, you go looking for it. But these are people who, you know, it just finds them, and that can be terrifying. Like, and in our field, it is. Kathy and I say this all the time, Kathy Weber, my partner, we don't get scared. It's very hard to scare us. But you go through these books and you think about it, and a lot of these people, it's their first, maybe their only paranormal experience, and it's truly frightening for them, and it makes an impact to the point where many of these stories, and when I was reading this Campfire 2, I noticed some of these stories happened to these people 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because to me, these people are not in it to become famous or anything like that. I'm not saying that others are, but they're not in it to become famous or anything. They've just had a really compelling story, and they're so, you know, I'm not saying every single person who calls me up on the Campfire show is necessarily telling me something that really happened. I actually believe the vast majority are. They seem to be very sincere folks. But these are stories where people call me up and say, Jim, this happened to me 20 to 30 years ago, and a lot of times during childhood, for example, and it made such an indelible impression on me that I'll never forget it, and I just felt that I had to tell you and your audience about it. And that's what I love about them. They're so sincere. And then I think doing this show has kind of changed my philosophy on the paranormal, because I always just thought, and I've been, like you said, about being interested in this before, it was cool. And Teresa, we've personally had this conversation. I think we're both similar that we've enjoyed this stuff and been interested in this stuff since we were little kids. But I always looked at it kind of intellectually. I kind of said, well, you know, it just makes sense to me that there's more to life than what we can see. You know, DNA has existed forever, but scientists didn't discover it, I think, until the 50s. They had any clue, 50s and 60s, and then really over time, you know, fleshed it out. But that didn't mean it didn't exist, and that's the way I feel about paranormal phenomena. It exists. We just don't understand it. We can't fully measure it yet. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there, God bless them, skeptics, that says it doesn't exist, but that doesn't mean they're right. So it was all very intellectual for me. But then I start doing these shows, and it's changed it in a way. I still have that intellectual piece that says, hey, it's just common sense, right? Something exists, you know, that we don't understand. But it's really put it into sharp focus for me because these are real people with real stories. Everybody from doctors and lawyers to ditch diggers. I don't know if we literally have a ditch digger, but you get my drift. So doing these books and doing this show has kind of evolved my own beliefs about the paranormal and the supernatural.
All right, Eric, do you want to chime in on this? Because I've kept you silent for 15 minutes.
I know. It's an exercise. And,
it's
and,
a record.
The strain is showing. I am clutching at my chair. I am. My nails are digging in. No, I actually really have been perfectly fine because I know you guys know each other, and that's important. And I like to listen as well as talk, but I like to talk an awful lot. So, Jim, yes, how fantastic to have you on the show. We really do appreciate it, and you know, kind of like you were saying a bit earlier, all success stories really are just bolstering to everyone else. When people are sort of, you know, they have the Schadenfreude where they're, you know, hate it when their friends are successful. That has never made any sense to me because the more players in a field that are successful, the bigger the pie grows. I don't see it as a zero-sum game at all. And anyone who's been at it, you know, for as long as you have, I mean, that is a long time. We've been doing this show since a year ago, July, and in some ways that seems like a long time. But, you know, you're going back into the digital cradle practically. And you're absolutely right about the ebb and flow of podcasting. Kind of the main thing I think that's changed is just that word became, you know, less emphasized. I mean, what we're doing on Blog Talk Radio, sure, you can listen live, and yes, it's available for streaming, but it's a podcast, you know, everything's a podcast these days, even live radio, because as long as it's recorded and available after the fact, which I know, for example, you know, Darkness is, I mean, that's on broadcast radio, and and yet it's available. So we've really seen this blending of the technologies, and it seems like you've really stayed on the forefront. And I think besides being sharp and being on top of things and knowing what was going on the tech side and knowing what your options are and all that, obviously you have worked very hard and been extremely successful at the most important part, which is the content side of it. So having said all that, merely was to say congratulations, and you know, we're very excited to have someone who is in our field, because usually we're talking to more the people who are doing.
Hello?
Hello? This is Jim Harold. Is anybody there? This is Jim Harold on the line. I'm still here.
Comes to mind. And I have a question, too, because I haven't seen the book yet. Are any of the stories in there yours?
Well, let me say, Eric, I don't know if you know this. We had a big drop-off there, so I wasn't able to hear much of what you said. I apologize. I thought we were off of the air for a moment there. Teresa, are you still there?
I think she, let's see. Let me try to bring her back on. You may have heard her going away. I'm here and have been here. Teresa, are you back? Teresa. Hello. According to the technology, she, Teresa, is on. Nope, now she's gone away again. Are you still there, Jim?
I am here, and I apologize. Well, you cut off. I did an ID of the show and told everybody they're listening to America's Most Haunted. So it's hard for me to stop being a broadcaster, so I apologize. I didn't mean to hijack your show, but you dropped out, and I didn't hear anybody, so I just put that in there so folks would know that we're still on.
Interesting. I'm wondering what happened. Well, anyway, it looks like hopefully Teresa's back. Yeah, all I was saying was I was kind of running through the rather than reiterate, I was just I was singing your praises for.
I heard that, and thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Sticking with this technology and staying on the forefront, and most importantly, to have always emphasized content and quality of content, because if you didn't have that, there's no way you would have stayed on top of the field all these years. So, you know, that's fantastic. Because some people really do kind of fall in love with the technology, and they fall in love with the trappings, and they kind of lose sight of why they're doing it in the first place. And clearly that has not happened to you. What I ended with was I'd love to hear just one or more, for that matter, but, you know, just kind of off the top of your head, one of your favorite stories from the book. And then I asked, are any of those stories yours?
Well, let me take those three things in order real quick. I'll make this the shortest because I know we're talking about haunted stuff, and I want to get to the content because, as you said, that's what we're about. But the thing that I think, Eric, is that we are doing radio. Now, you can call it internet streaming radio. You can call it podcast, but at the end of the day, it's radio. It doesn't matter. The delivery system doesn't matter. If you don't do good radio, then there's nothing there and nobody will tune in. So that's just my thought on that. I agree with you 110%. Now, in terms of one of my favorite stories, I'll just throw this one out here. This is a nice short one, and I really like this one. This is about a man who lived in Michigan and in the mid-90s, and he lived in a small house with his wife and baby. And he would sit in his living room, and his baby would be in the next room over, and sometimes the baby would cry. And over a series of weeks, he kept noticing his baby would cry, and out of his peripheral vision, he would notice his wife going into this room to quiet the baby. And then one particular night, this same scenario played out, and his wife comes in the living room and said, "Did you just go in there and quiet the baby a few minutes ago?" She said, no, I was downstairs doing laundry." And then he realized, have I been seeing somebody else or something else go into my baby's room to quiet the baby? Because he'd always see this out of the, it wouldn't be direct, it would be out of the corner of his eye, out of the peripheral vision. But he kind of blew it off and thought, I'm just imagining things. Nevertheless, one day, same scenario, he's in the living room, baby is in the room over, and his wife's not there. She's at work. She's a nurse. She's working in the evening. Scenario plays out. The baby cries. All of a sudden, out of the corner of his eye, he sees a female figure go through the room, go in, and the baby quiets. So obviously, it wasn't always his wife quieting him. And he said once he moved, he asked the people who purchased the house from him. He said, "Hey, do your babies cry very much in the house?" And they said, "Oh, no, they start to cry sometimes, but not for long at all. They just seem to quiet themselves." And that's why I call that one Ghost Nanny.
Oh, that's great. Well, there's Mama right there, but the benign side of Mama.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, you wanted to hear if I had one myself. Now, this one is not specifically in this book. It's in the first book. And it's really not dramatic. You know, Teresa, for example, I know you see a lot of dramatic things or full-body apparitions and those kind of things. And this is more of an after-death communication, the way that I took it. Now, it may be my own interpretation of it, but here's what happened. My brother, unfortunately, I'm in my mid-40s now, but my brother passed about 14 years ago, very young. He was a couple years younger than me, so he was in his 20s, unexpectedly. He was autistic, And we had gone down, my wife and I, to his funeral down to West Virginia, where I'm actually talking to you tonight because I'm down here visiting. And we were coming back home and we were driving through southern Ohio. And as anybody knows who drives through a rural area, sometimes it's tough to get a radio station. You'll get something and it'll stay in for 5 or 10 minutes and then it'll drift off and you'll have to find another station. So my brother passes, funeral. We're headed back, my wife and I'm flipping through the stations, and they have this station that has kind of, don't hear them quite as much as you used to, but kind of music of your life, like Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Nat King Cole, that kind of stuff. And I've, along with other types of music that I enjoy, that's been a particular type of music I've always loved. So I thought, well, you know, might as well have a little diversion. You know, this is a pretty awful thing that's just happened, but at least we can listen to something pleasant on the radio. So I tuned it in, and there's this instrumental playing. And it's one of those things where something's familiar. It's very old-fashioned. I've heard this group before, this band, but I can't place it. And before I explain to you what happened was, before I explain, I should say that my brother, who grew up in the 70s, as did I, had this fascination with all people. Now, remember, he's autistic. He loved Lawrence Welk. Now, later generations would know him from the skits on SNL and things, parodying that show, but he loved Lawrence Welk. He absolutely loved him. Now, I don't know why a guy who, you know, was in his mid-20s and when he was a little kid loved Lawrence Welk, but God bless him, he loved Lawrence Welk. So anyway, the back announce comes on the radio and says, "Of course, that was the great 1960 hit Calcutta by Lawrence Welk." And to me, and again, this could be wishful thinking or it could be reading into it, I think that that was my brother's way of saying that, hey, big brother, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. And I got to thinking about it. I had to be driving. First of all, I've listened to quite a few of those kind of stations through my life. Never heard, I can't recall any other time hearing Lawrence Welk playing. Not really a top radio hit maker.
No, he's not a radio guy. He's a TV guy.
Yeah, not exactly. Wonderful, but not a radio guy. I had to be in that particular spot on the map, in range of that particular station, at that particular time, to hear somebody that was probably played once every, you know, twice a year, even in that format. So to me, that was a sign for my brother. Now, some people would say, hey, it's just a coincidence, but it was meaningful to me.
And I think that's what's important. And sometimes the coincidences add up, you know, to the point where you say it couldn't have just been a coincidence, because it's the coincidences that become so unlikely, you know. Which, I mean, it doesn't mean it's impossible, but I think if you had that feeling at that time and in that place, that's what counts, and I think that's
I got to tell you, the funny thing is my wife knew that, because we always joked that he loved Lawrence Welk. When they came on there and said that, my wife looked at me like, oh, my God. And it's funny, we have a story just like that in the book, and I think this one's even more striking, if I may share it with you. This gentleman used to work as a stonemason, and he said he had a radio that he would take out in the job, and, you know, and it gets damp outside and things, and they're working in tough conditions. So he said on this particular day the radio had gotten wet and stopped working. And he brought it inside and he came home. And at the time he didn't know if it was on or off. He just knew it wasn't working. He said he used to have to smack it to get it going. He said he was at his dinner table with his wife and the topic of his late sister Lynn came up. She passed away in 1972. He said that he thought it was nearing her birthday or the anniversary of her death. So for any reason, they were talking about specifically. Now, they were both sitting there, and the radio was sitting there that he brought in. And all of a sudden, the song came on, So Far Away by Carole King. Now, that seems kind of eerie in and of itself, but get this. It was a song that his sister sang great. She played the piano well, and she could sing all of Carole King's songs. She was very talented, and she said, he said, what made this, and this is Dave from Michigan, I believe, he said, another Michigan story, by the way, said, what made this very strange was that it wasn't like he had just talked about his sister Lynn. he was talking about her at that very instant. He says that he feels that was transcendental, and it was some kind of dimensional communication. And he said even his wife picked up on it, and he says, we don't believe every story that comes down the road, but how could you deny this? He says, she was telling me she was so far away, it gives you the chills. She believes, he believes it's a message that she is still out there. So I think this kind of thing's happened to numerous people.
Well, clearly, as I've been kind of, one of the things that's been really fun and interesting for me over the last year and a half or so since we've been really working on this, I've myself have always been interested in the paranormal, I suppose in the broadest sense. I was reading all the, mystery books as a kid, world mysteries and the Shroud of Turin and, you know, how do these things, spontaneous combustion and just the way most people get into it. Yes, exactly. And similar eras, though, as Teresa knows, I'm older than both of you, but that's okay because I am ever youthful. So anyway, I've always been really interested, but I haven't really been focused on it. I was not an investigator of any sort in the real world. I definitely entered this through the media door. We were watching. We started watching some of those shows, the investigation TV shows, and then since I was running a site anyway, I thought, you know, hey, I'm start talking to some of these people. They're really cool and interesting, and I'd like to hear what they have to say. And then those stories, those interviews did really, really well. We got super great traffic, and I said, I'm going to follow this path since I'm interested in it on the one hand, and it seems to be quite popular. So, but it's been really interesting now that I've been intensely involved, and certainly through the process of working on the book, the America's Most Haunted Book, with Teresa and reading her theories and her thoughts and doing research and whatnot. It's been a lot of fun and more intellectual, but not only. I really related when you were talking about that earlier, too, the intellectual versus the, I suppose, more visceral side of it, but to kind of piece together my own theory about all this, just picking and choosing, nothing particularly original, just kind of what seems to make sense. So clearly, to me, it seems only logical that the paranormal world, the spirit world, is a form of energy. And as you also were saying earlier, it's just probably something we just haven't figured out yet. We don't have the right kinds of instruments. We're not able to place it yet really in a theoretical framework, etc. But undoubtedly, if in fact it exists, and by now I'm certainly convinced that it does, that it takes the form of energy, and very probably more than one form of energy. So if that isn't indeed the case, then the interacting of energy with other forms of energy only makes sense. And so often you see in these scenarios, whether it be doing live investigations or seeing what they're doing on TV, there is some sort of interactive element with the electronics or with batteries or things being drained. And so, you know, there's clear interaction between spirit entities, for lack of a better term, and other forms of energy, whether it be electrical or radio or otherwise. So it does seem plausible to me that there could be interaction between those worlds, and that's how does that work would be an amazing thing to figure out, and what that interaction is and how those energies are able to affect each other. But it seems fairly clear to me at this point that energy is drawing on other forms of energy, or even from personal energy, the energy of human beings in order to manifest themselves or express themselves or et cetera. So it makes sense to me is what I'm saying.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about the energy of oneself, and this is not, I think this is pretty well known out there that this is a theory, but I had Michael Clarkson, who is a Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist from Canada who did a whole book on the poltergeist phenomenon. And hard-boiled, I believe his background was in crime journalism, so not, you know, not like a wishy-washy or not at all touchy-feely kind of guy necessarily. But he came away thinking that there was absolutely something to the poltergeist phenomena. He tends to think it draws energy off of people, you know, for example, adolescents, those kind of things. But, again, I think there's some pretty good there's some pretty strong people out there that are seeing that there's more than meets the eye here. Would you be interested in hearing a story about a haunted recliner?
Absolutely, Jim, since I'm sitting in one.
There you go.
Share your stories, and then I'm going to talk a little bit more about the book. Share the haunted recliner story. That's a good one.
Yes, yes. And by the way, let's hope, Eric, that yours is not haunted. But anyway...
I am neutral on the subject. I haven't made any decisions yet.
Yes, there you go. Well, this is the story of a young lady in Washington. And her family, and I assume she was around teenage years when this happened. She told the story 10 years later. And she had the family friend wanted to get rid of some furniture. So her mom and her went over to get the furniture. And there was a recliner there, a couple of recliners. And a dresser and some things. There was an older gentleman said, well, you can have this, but that recliner, you mustn't give that to anyone else. And she said, sure, sure. And this guy was in his 80s. So they went and they took the recliner and the dresser. And then a couple of months or so after they got the furniture, the older man passed away. Now, after his death, they started to experience weird things with one of the recliners in particular. My listener said that sometimes she would hear something in the garage moving around, but she would ignore it. She would make a joke and tell the ghost, if you drop anything, you're picking it up because I'm not cleaning up your mess. And then they put the recliner in the brother's bedroom. All of a sudden, he started having these problems with depression. He had to have he had appendicitis and had to get a surgery. And it all corresponded with this recliner going in the room. So for whatever reason, they decided a year or so later to get rid of the recliner, and they gave it to the older sister of the family who lived on her own and had children, and they put the recliner in her son's room. And strange things started happening to him. He said that sometimes he would see at night the chair move. He said he would see a hand come across the resting arm area, and it would tap its phantom fingers. He told his mom, there's this arm, I'm seeing this thing, and I don't like it. What is this? And she didn't believe him and thought, you're just tired, you're stressed out from school. So one night it happened again, and this time he went to his mom, and he refused to go back into his room. And she said, don't worry about it. I'll take the chair and put it in my room, because there's nothing to this. A couple of days later, after they went to bed, she started to hear something. She looked. She saw the chair moving, and all of a sudden she started to see the apparition of an arm come up, just as the boy had said. It was starting to tap its fingers, and she said it started to become a weird demonic form. Well, at that point she's like, I've had enough of this chair, I'm getting rid of it. So she drags it out of the house and puts it onto the curb in the middle of the night to get rid of it permanently, closes the door and figures that's the end of it. She starts hearing something outside. She hears something rocking back and forth, plus a dragging sound. And she thinks, somebody, a garbage picker's come by, and he's scavenging, and he's taking the recliner. But she looked out the window. Well, what she saw gave her a real shock. They saw her and her son saw the chair rocking and dragging itself along the curb. She said, I could have sworn, I'm not lying, but what I saw looked like a figure. And there were these weird spirits just jumping out of this thing. I just closed the windows. I didn't even open a window or crack it or anything. I didn't care. After that, they never saw the chair again, but makes me think twice about used furniture.
Oh, my God. That's a really scary one. That was not a benign... I'd say it was about time to get rid of that.
Couple warm fuzzies. I want you to know there's a few thrillers in there, too.
That's a great one. And you're a great storyteller. Thanks.
Well,
that was terrific.
You.
I enjoyed that.
I want to talk a little bit about the book. For those of you who have not read the book, and you should get it, like, immediately the second we get off air, you should go get it. But what I like about the book is the way it's broken up. In part one, you have true ghost stories. In part two, it's dreams, visions, angels. Part three, and this was my favorite, From Beyond the Grave. Part four, strange creatures. And I have my favorite stories here. Oh, part five, They Come from the Sky. Part six, really weird stuff. But what I liked about the way the stories are, and again, we talked about this, that these are from real people. These aren't necessarily ghost hunters. But the ones that really chilled me, and even when I do talks and when I talk to people and I teach my classes, the stories that seem to really kind of get under people's skin are these ones, these messages from beyond the grave, where people get the phone calls or they see people who have already passed. When the spirit seemed to be using technology to communicate with us, those seem to creep people out. I've noticed that I get a real reaction when I tell a story like that, and you have an entire section in your book about that. And, you know, how can a ghost use a phone? Well, we don't know how a ghost can talk at all, do we? But when you're getting that message, when there's that extra beep on the answering machine and you play it back and you hear the voice, and these are some of these stories that you have in your book, and those are the ones of all the stories in the book, and those are the ones that really creeped me out the most, and I thought it was going to be the true ghost stories. Another one that creeped me out was the one about Grandpa's pipe tobacco, the cherry pipe tobacco, because my grandfather also smoked cherry pipe tobacco, and he's the one who got me into the paranormal. Of course, and I don't want to get into this one because I know you talked about it on another show, the walking Ouija board, but that's an interesting one for people to hear, especially if you have something about the Ouija board. But what I learned something from your book, Jim, about the – I know, and I thought I knew everything. Apparently I don't. The Mexican witchcraft, and I'm going to not pronounce it right, Brujera.
I believe that's how she pronounced it. Again, I am not an expert in Brujera, I believe. Yeah, I believe that was Jennifer from Texas told that story. And that was certainly a spooky one. She was involved with a boyfriend who was involved with some dark witchcraft. That was Dark Witchcraft Comes to Roost, is that story.
Yeah, and that was that one kind of creeped me out. I didn't know anything about it. I'd never heard of that. And like Jim said, that's Jennifer from Texas. The people who submitted these stories, they don't even get their last name mentioned. So nobody is doing this for fame. There's no incentive for them to try and get their story out. They're not lying. That's why I believe these stories to be so true. The other one, and this is probably one of my favorite stories in the book, and it kind of brings it back to the media point of view, was the Nightmare Before.
Oh, everybody loves that one. A Nightmare Before Elm Street. Do you want me to tell that one? Because I love that one.
Tell that one, because that movie made a huge impact on me, because at the time that was the scariest movie besides The Exorcist and the Amityville Horror that I had ever seen. So it made a huge impact. So let's tell that story for us. I love that one.
Well, our story begins in 1961. You know, that's a long time ago. John Kennedy was president. And this young man was 5 years old. He lived in a small town in Illinois. It appears that they lived on a military base or near a military base, and his dad was away serving the country, and he lived with his mom. And he said the house frightened him. He had a lot of nightmares, but he said this one particular nightmare in this house stayed with him to this day. Now, remember, again, this was probably told me this story in 2011, so that's a long time to remember something. So in this particular time, he had gone to sleep, and in his dream, he was in his backyard. There was a hill in his backyard. A door opened out of the hill, and in this dream, this figure came out of the hill and was chasing him. He said this person had a long black coat on and had long fingers with knives on them. He said he was running from him, and he fell. And in his dream, he was trying to drag himself away, and just before the figure got to him, he woke up. Now, he said at the time, he shared a room with his sister, who was only 4 years old. When he woke up, he told his sister, he said, "Get Mom. I can't move my legs." His sister went, got his mom. They came, and sure enough, He couldn't move his legs. He was, his legs were paralyzed. At that point, 1961, you know, 50 years ago, over 50 years ago now, they still had house calls. Doctor came out, said, who scared this child so? And they said, nobody scared him. He had a nightmare. It took a few days before he could walk again, move his legs. Actually, he said his grandmother came over and was exercising his legs in kind of like a rudimentary physical therapy. So he said, needless to say, this dream had an extreme effect on him. But then he went on to be a normal little boy with no health issues, but occasionally he would have the beginnings of this nightmare recur throughout his childhood. But he said he would always wake up before he'd get to the entire nightmare. He said it would also correlate with getting a high fever. He said it would be a symptom of being sick, and he just related to that. So anyway, now we come to the really weird part of the story. 1988. Now, I was young back then, the good old days. But anyway, this gentleman
I was still old.
This gentleman had a friend, and they used to go walking together with this friend, and the friend gave him, this woman gave him a tape, a VHS, if you remember that, of a movie called Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, he'd never seen the movie before, so he popped it into his VHS, and he said when he turned it on, I thought I was going to have a heart attack, because when I first saw the Freddy Krueger character, I realized that this was the person who was in my nightmare in 1961. Freddy killed kids in their dreams. And he said he always told his mother, I thought if he had caught me in that first dream, he would have killed me, that he would have died in his sleep. He said he lived that movie over 20 years before it was made. Now, there's an interesting postscript to this since the book's come out, and I have not been able to research this, so I do not know if it's true. But some people have told me that the movies were somewhat based on people having nightmares and dying and things, and something similar to this actually happened to people that inspired the movie. I don't know if that's true, but boy, is it interesting. Is it really interesting? And as you said, Teresa, we all learn from each other, and I'm learning from my audience. People are writing me and saying, hey, this really happened, or something like this happened. So we're really, this is Frank from Colorado. So we really bolster, you know, this story. But he was very sincere, and again, this kicked off 50 years ago, so you know it really made an impression on him.
Well, we do kind of know the background for where the Nightmare on Elm Street supposedly came from, and we had them as the producer of the Unexplained Files on our show. And one of the episodes on the Unexplained Files, and Eric, I forgot the gentleman's name that we interviewed. Eric would know. He was producer of the Unexplained Files, which was on the Science Channel, I believe.
Yeah, and
it was the story that they got was there was these, they were Chinese immigrants or something, and they were dying from the sleeping death. They were dying in their dreams, supposedly. This was supposed to be a real phenomenon, and they were afraid to go to sleep because they would go to sleep and they were supposedly being scared to death and dying in their dreams. And that is where we had heard here on America's Most Haunted from this producer that was the inspiration for Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, that could have been an inspiration. Maybe it was not the inspiration. This one sounds so much more specific to that movie. So,
yeah, I can add to that.
Add, please, because you know more about this than me.
I think probably, like you say, there are multiple sources. Your story, Jim's story, is very specific, very focused. Teresa, what you were talking about, and this has actually been studied in some depth. I've read about it as well as that it was featured on TV. It's the Hmong people, H-M-O-N-G, of, I believe, Cambodia. It's a specific ethnic group from Cambodia, and they have a particular set of beliefs where, for some reason, their dream states are extremely heightened, and they have beliefs that, in essence, dreaming is not a respite from life, from real life, but it's simply another form of real life. So they take dreams extremely seriously. And there is a demon, I believe, I guess is what it is. There's a demon that is very prevalent in their thinking. They're kind of always on the lookout for this demon. And because they've made themselves, I suppose, to put it bluntly, I suppose, or unsympathetically, they've made themselves particularly vulnerable by having these beliefs on the reality of dreams, so that when this demon attacks them in their sleep, they have literally died. And this is, I mean, I don't know the numbers of people, but it's, I think it's as many as, you know, dozens. And these are just the ones who've come to the U.S., and that's over time. But, you know, there's, and it's not always clear how that person died because they died in their sleep. But there's been actually quite a bit of research into this because it is so extreme and it's so unusual that, you know, these people are literally frightened to death, this subset of people. And this is all in the U.S. I'm not sure if the dozens, the number, that kind of number applies to people back in Cambodia as well, but at least some of them, it happened in the U.S. There's another completely separate element to the whole, you know, pre-Nightmare on Elm Street, and that was in, what was the show, Teresa, that that Katrina was in, the one that was on Chiller?
Real Fear?
Yeah, yeah. It was part two. It was the one that was recently on, and we had Katrina on, one of the investigators, to talk about it. And one of their investigations, it was a series of, what, I think half-hour investigations, one of theirs was looking into some dream studies, and I think that was that a mental institution?
They were at Pennhurst when they did that, yeah.
Right. So there's another element where dreams were really imposing themselves, and almost a reversal of reality in dream states, where to some of these people, the dream state seemed more real, or at least equally real, than real life. And so, you know, imagine the... Somewhere in the back of your mind, at least by the time you make it to, I would think teenagehood, but certainly adulthood, no matter how vivid a dream is, for the most part, somewhere in your brain, you know you're asleep, you know it's a dream. And you even usually, I mean, speaking for myself anyway, I can almost enjoy the story unfolding in a dream, even if it's scary or frightening or upsetting, because I do know it's not real. And I'm guessing, you know, most people are have similar states of awareness. But imagine if you didn't know it wasn't real, or if you had the held the conviction that it was real, you know. So anyway, there are several strains of thought, of influence, I think, that did go into Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think that's why that movie in particular, I mean, certainly it became a extremely extended, absurd series, as so many of them do, but, you know, that original impulse, that original film and that character, the Freddy Krueger character, I think the reason it does still stand up and it had a lot of resonance for people, and it was genuinely frightening for people, is because we do have this very tenuous relationship with the dream state, and that, you know, on some level we are afraid of what goes on there, and fear that there may be more to it than we think. So, yeah, that's amazing. That's a fantastic story. I really can't wait to get a hold of the book. And, of course, we'll have to get back to your first book as well. I want to hear all of these. And that is amazing, amazing stuff. And I now – it is obvious and evident why Teresa is such a big fan of yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate it.
Oh, I know. I wish our show was longer because we got so much more to talk about. Jim, besides the Paranormal Podcast, and he touched on this, he has the Campfire Tales and the Paranormal Plus Club, which is amazing. This is like a subscription club, but there are so many benefits to being on the Paranormal Plus Club, and I was lucky enough to teach a webinar for Jim on the Paranormal Plus Club, as was our good friend, Michelle Belanger. We just did an event with this past Friday at the Lake County History Center where we raised $2,200 in a matter of hours for the History Center, and she helps us out with that event every year. So it's great, and she's a good friend of your show, and I know that she's been on and taught in John Cuba as well. So these shows are great, and before we go off the air, I want you to, of course, tell people where you can get a hold of all these things and find your books and find your podcast, but I do have to do one more plug, and this one is for myself. Coming up on November 16th, I've been invited to speak at the Ohio Paranormal Gathering, and this isn't exactly a conference. This is a very more of an informal gathering down near the Akron area where there's going to be a few paranormal speakers, but I am going to join a friend of America's Most Haunted, Adam Bonnet, who we have had on the show before, and he's going to talk about his alter ego glider. Adam is he's in a wheelchair, but he is a paranormal investigator, and he works at one of these super haunts. So he's going to be appearing at this conference, and I'm going to be there to help him out, and this is going to be a good thing. And I think our friend Kristen, the researcher, and Shannon, the historian, might also be there, rumor has it. So this will be a good thing on November 16th, so look on our Facebook page for that, or on my personal Facebook page for that, and we will post to that. But, Jim, before we run out of time, before we go, we're not live after 11, so we got a couple more minutes, and we can keep talking forever. But before we go off the air live, I want you to tell people where they can find all your shows and your books, please.
I would recommend starting on the free site, jimharold.com, J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D.com. You can get the free Paranormal Podcast, the free Campfire, my free weekly newsletter. And then for the book, you can just go to jimharoldbooks.com. It's available on the Kindle and paperback. I will tell you, it is $2.99 on the Kindle, and it will be through tomorrow. Tomorrow, I believe, is the 6th through the 6th. On the 7th, the price goes up, so you might want to get that Kindle book as soon as you can. 70 spooky stories for only $2.99. And then if you're a dead tree person, you can get the paperback for under $9 on Amazon. I hope you'll check it out. JimHarold.com and JimHaroldBooks.com. Those are the places that go to get you what you want. And thank you guys so much, Eric and Teresa. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You know what? It's been great having you on. And I have a thing, and I have a Kindle. My daughter has a Kindle, and I love that. I love holding a book in my hand.
It's true.
I love that book in my hand. And, you know, Jim was nice enough to inscribe my book for me. All my books of our friend Michelle Belanger, she is inscribed for me. And, you know, you can't inscribe my Kindle or my iPad. I will get mad if you write it with a Sharpie, my iPad. So it's worth a few bucks to get the paper book, but you can't beat it on Kindle. And it's full of stories, 70 stories. These are great stories. And, you know, when I was reading this, I kept thinking of what Eric and I went through when we were trying to lightly edit the stories that we got from other people for our book, because, you know, as an author, when you ask people to submit a story and they give you a story and you can't write it word for word the way they send it to you because your publisher will lash at you. You know, you can't just write the way they wrote it. So you have to lightly edit it but still keep their voice and keep it true. So I applaud you because you had to do it 70 times. I didn't have to do it quite so many times. So...
It was a joy talking to both of you tonight and your great audience.
It was great. I thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to have you on again. I can't wait to see what's next for Jim Harreld? And you, when do you do your podcast? Are they once a month? Are they once a week? When do you do all these wonderful shows that you have, Jim?
I probably put 4 or 5 shows out per week, and two of those are free, and 2 to 3 are the Plus Club. But there's plenty of content for the free folks, so I'm pretty busy all the time. This is my full-time job.
And that's another thing I wanted to talk about. You, and this was just recently, like a year ago, wasn't it, that you went to This Is It full-time working in this field, and I applaud you for that. I bow down to you. I think this is amazing. So thank you so much.
It's a lot of fun. It's a great job.
It is. It is. It's great. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to have you on. I can't wait to have you back, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Jim. Great meeting you.
And check him out, jimharreld.com, jimharreld.net, and look for the America's Most Haunted website. We'll be up any minute now, right, Eric?
Yeah, you know, we were supposed to be up by Halloween. That didn't happen. I figured, yeah, you know, we'll be up by early the following week. We're not up. I'm kind of by tomorrow. I may have to do something dramatic. May have to bring in someone different. That would be sad. I really don't want to have to start over again. But
yeah,
we need a site, and we need it up, and it has to be reliable, and maybe this is a sign, because, you know, you got to have a reliable tech person, because things do go wrong. Things need to be adjusted and changed and this and that and everything else. So once we are up and functioning, we certainly want that to go smoothly from here on out. And we're expecting pretty quick growth. We're hoping for that. We're thinking we can get the traffic up pretty quickly on the site. So once we're up, it will be very important that it be that the site and that it be reliable. And so I don't know, maybe this is a sign, but I guess I'm going to give it about one more day, because last I heard we were, you know, 98%, 99% ready to go. So I guess we'll see if indeed that is true.
Our hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers want a site, so let's get on that. All right, thank
boy,
you
they
very
sure
much.
Do, and they deserve one. By God.
They do. Thank you so much, Jim Harreld, for being on America's Most Haunted. It's been a true pleasure. Thank you, Eric. Good night, everybody. We will see you next week. Oh, this Friday, I am at the fundraiser for Greenwood Farm in Richmond Heights. Still place spots available for that. Check it out on my Facebook page and America's Most Haunted, AM Haunted on Facebook. Good night, everybody.